Freedom Guns is your local gun store for the Rockledge Coco area in Brevard County, Florida. Stop in and meet Mike and the gang and see the great deals they have on long guns, handguns, accessories, ammunition, AR build kits, and Liberty safes that come with free delivery and installation. They're located at 1255 Florida Avenue, just north of Rockledge High School. For more information, check them out at freedom-guns.com. Tell them you heard about them on the Shooting Straight Radio podcast.
The Shooting Straight Radio podcast is proudly sponsored in part by The Gun Sight in Merritt Island, with a 9-lane, 25-yard indoor shooting range, handgun and machine gun rentals, a fully stocked gun store with plenty of long guns, handguns, ammunition, and accessories to choose from. They're your one-stop shop in Merritt Island for all things necessary to responsibly exercise your Second Amendment right. Check them out at gunsightrange.com or stop by in person at 125 South Banana River Drive. And make sure you tell them that you heard about The Gun Sight on the Shooting Straight Radio podcast.
Yes, we are locked and loaded on the Shooting Straight Radio podcast. This is the program all about firearms, the Second Amendment, and all things pertaining thereto. And I am Royce, your oh-so-huggable, squeezable, lovable, cuddly little host, still reeking of gunshot residue, toxic masculinity, and a faint yet wildly tantalizing whiff of the cologne of my people. Hops number 9, you'd better believe it. Welcome to episode number 612. And speaking of episode numbers, I got an email that said, hey, I was finding your podcast on one of the podcast platforms, and it says that there's only 200 and something episodes that you put out. And I told them that, well, I'm including all of the episodes since this program first aired live on WMMB and iHeartRadio back in 2014. So that seemed to placate the listener. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your feedback. You can give me feedback at Royce@ShootingStraightRadio.com. Royce@ShootingStraightRadio.com. And I will be glad to hear any comments, questions, or even suggestions. Now, this is going to be a very intense program. This has to do with judicial rulings about the Second Amendment and people affected thereby. There's I think 4 different cases we're going to be looking at here, and I'm not going to dive in depth too deep, or we could be here for a couple of weeks. But I remember I said that we cannot trust the courts to render proper judicial decisions regarding the Second Amendment. Too many of them have been brainwashed, and too many of them come from liberal universities that hate, loathe, despise, and abominate our supreme law, the United States Constitution. And they are nothing more and certainly nothing less than judicial activists. They are not justices. They are not judges. They like to think they have power over the Constitution. And I tell you what, when you hear about this first case we're going to dive into, I think your blood's going to boil a little bit. So you may want to have you some aspirin on standby or maybe some Maalox or something. Because when you hear what this judge said to this defendant's attorney, you're going to sit there and shake your head at first and go, did he say that right? But yes, wait till you hear this. It's infuriating, actually, and it shows you the contempt that these socialists, these communists, these judicial activists who are steeped in socialism and communism, it shows how they think. I told you before, these people are audacious as the day is long, and when you hear this statement come out of this judge's mouth, you're going to be gobsmacked probably for a moment and go, what? Seriously? This is an article by Jeff Charles, and the title of the, I'm not going to give you the title because it'll give away what this lady said, this female judge who is an immigrant here, she comes from immigrants here in this country herself, and you would think she would understand and appreciate freedom. You would think she would understand and appreciate the Constitution, but apparently that's not the case. A Brooklyn man has been convicted of 13 weapons charges after having been arrested and charged in 2022 for building his own firearms. Dexter Taylor's ordeal could become a landmark Second Amendment case in light of the Bruin ruling handed down in the same year. The jury found Taylor guilty of second-degree criminal possession of a loaded weapon, 4 counts of third-degree criminal possession of a weapon, 5 counts of criminal possession of a firearm, second-degree criminal possession of 5 or more firearms, unlawful possession of pistol ammunition, violation of certificate of registration, prohibition on unfinished frames or receivers. 2 lesser charges, including third-degree criminal possession of 3 or more firearms and third-degree possession of a weapon, were not voted on. Taylor, a 52-year-old New York native, and that obviously tells you exactly where this ruling was handed down from, New York, yes, where people's rights are not respected in the least by the ruling class. The 52-year-old New York native and a software engineer, in other words, a productive member of society, discovered the world of gunsmithing years ago. He decided to take it up as a hobby and possibly turn it into a business later. However, when a joint ATF-NYPD task force discovered he was legally, yes, legally, not illegally, maybe illegal, according to New York, as far as owning it, but it's totally legal to buy firearm parts from various companies, they opened up an investigation that led to a SWAT raid and arrest. Number one, what's the ATF involved in it for? They are a federal law enforcement agency and a filthy, vile, violent, corrupt one at that. They shouldn't be enforcing a state law. You're welcome. They had no business being there. But they will gladly jump onto a state's team tyranny and persecute law-abiding citizens with glee and fervor. He is currently being jailed on Rikers Island as he awaits sentencing. Taylor's conviction highlights the ongoing battle for gun rights. During an interview with Venu Varghese, Taylor's defense attorney, he detailed how Taylor's trial proceeded and highlighted a distinct bias in favor of the prosecution, like Donald Trump is being dealt with now. Varghese described how Taylor became fascinated by weapons science during the COVID-19 lockdowns, which inspired him to take up his gunsmithing hobby. Be careful being a hobbyist with firearms there, Mr. Taylor. You might get Malinowski'd. He said he ended up building, I believe, this was Mr. Varghese's statement. He was the attorney for Mr. Taylor. He ended up building, I believe it was 8 pistols and 5 rifles or 6 rifles, AR-style rifles, and then 8 or 9 Glock pistols that he built. In an interview prior to his conviction, Taylor told Red State, because that's who printed this article, redstate.com, by the way, a good conservative publication online. Mr. Taylor said, I found out you can actually legally buy a receiver and you can machine that receiver to completion, and you buy your parts and you put them together and you've got a pistol or a rifle. And once I saw that, I was hooked. I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. This is the most cool thing you could possibly do in your machine shop. I agree, Mr. Taylor. It is cool. Just not in the eyes of your state government and your county government and your city government there in New York. From the beginning of Taylor's trial, it was evident that the court would be biased against the defendant, according to Varghese, who explained that 2 judges presided over his case before the current official, Judge Abina Darka, took over. The judge interrupted Varghese's opening statement multiple times as he tried to set the stage for Taylor's defense. In other words, she didn't like him setting things up to actually defend his client like he was freaking being paid to do. Even further, she admonished the defense to refrain from mentioning the Second Amendment during the trial. Okay, did you catch that? He said, well, come on, Royce, probably just a matter of process and policy, you know, maybe just a court proceeding. No. She exposed her bias in this statement that she gave directly to Mr. Varghese, who was Mr. Taylor's attorney. This is what she said. Do not bring the Second Amendment into this courtroom. Wow. Do not bring the Second Amendment into this courtroom. Oh, it gets better. It doesn't exist here. So you can't argue Second Amendment. This is New York. Wow. What a lot to unpack in that statement, huh? You can't argue the Second Amendment. This is New York. Do you understand what she's saying here? I'm sure you do. All of the listeners of this program are pretty smart, except for the 3 federal agents that are always watching it and listening to it, and probably a few in the NSA and CIA too. But you cannot argue the Second Amendment here. In other words, that right does not exist for you. You cannot argue it. This is New York. She should be dragged off the bench in handcuffs, thrown into a jail cell to sit there and rot until her trial for treason, as far as this humble host is concerned. Back to the article, Varghese said he had filed the appropriate paperwork to preserve these arguments for appeal, but that the judge rejected those arguments and she went out of her way to limit him. During the trial, the prosecution attempted to paint Taylor as a dangerous individual who was building dangerous firearms in his basement. In this vein, the prosecution objected to allowing Taylor's family in the courtroom to show support. What? Are you freaking kidding me? You object against a man having his own family in the courtroom to show support because you're afraid it might hamper your prosecution? The prosecution should be in jail right beside Judge Darka. This is an abomination. This is criminal. This is treasonous, what these people are doing. They literally think that they have the power over the Second Amendment. They can make the courts work in the way they want it to. And as far as they're concerned, they don't give a crap if you're innocent or guilty. You're going to be prosecuted and convicted with whatever they dadgum well say you're going to be charged with and convicted of. Wow. You won't let his family in the courtroom. Wow. They wouldn't allow his upstairs neighbor, who knew about Taylor's hobby, according to the article, to testify on his behalf. Are you getting this? Back to the article. Varghese described the prosecutor's opening statement. He said, He opens up and he says that Mr. Taylor had a parade of horror. He was building this horrible place. When they saw this horror that he was making under the noses of his neighbors, one of whom wanted to testify in his defense, but they wouldn't let him, because all of those guns intended to hit their targets. Guns cannot have intentions. Guns are inanimate. Intentions are the product of rational thought. Well, of course, not in the case of the judge and the prosecution here. But basically, they were implying that he was definitely going to go harm people with these guns. That's what they were saying. And Mr. Varghese, when he countered such a narrative during his opening statement, the judge interrupted him again. She said, there's no crime here. There's no allegation of Varghese said this. He said, there's no crime here. There's no allegation of violence. He said, also, I got up and said, you're going to learn what Dexter is, who he is. You're going to learn that he never fired these guns. Well, the judge didn't like that, so she interrupted him again, and she commanded the prosecution and the defense attorneys into her chambers for a second time. The article continues, Varghese explained that he believed the only chance of having the case go in his client's favor was through jury nullification, which, by the way, is an American constitutional principle, which basically says, this is what happens when members of a jury actually believe a defendant may have violated a particular law, but then they decide against prosecuting them because they disagree with the law, especially on constitutional grounds. Judge Darka attempted to shut that argument down, the article continues, and led the jury to believe that they would face consequences if they did not vote to convict Taylor. In reality, of course, that's not the case. Jury nullification is not illegal at all. It is absolutely part of American jurisprudence, okay? Varghese made another statement. He said, I actually argue that jury nullification is allowed because there is some law from the High Court of New York that talks about lawyers who made jury nullification arguments. And basically, they said that judges should not encourage it, but they cannot prevent it. He said, I actually made a pitch directly to Judge Darka to allow me to argue during nullification. She, of course, rejected that. He added, she basically told the jury, you must vote guilty. Of course, without actually saying, you must vote guilty. He characterized Judge Darka as, quote, being the most aggressive prosecutor in the room. In other words, this woman had already made up her mind, and she was going to make sure that the jury thought the way she thought, and that this man, this law-abiding citizen, this upstanding member of society, have no criminal record whatsoever, a productive member of society. Nope, she was going to make an example out of him. It sounds a lot like Brian Aitken. If you don't know who that is, buy his book on Amazon, Under the Blue Tent Sky, and the hell he went through in New Jersey, having broken no law, not even no constitutional law, but no New Jersey law. But the judge decided to make an example out of him and would not even allow the statute that he was being charged with violating to be read in the courtroom to the jury because he knew that it would just blow their case out of the water. On April 16th, when it was almost time for the court to close for the day, the jury returned with a verdict. They found Taylor guilty of all but two counts. He was immediately taken into custody. The lawyer described what happened after the verdict was read. And when the verdict was read, his mom started crying in the back, and he said to me, Vinu, and that's Mr. Varghese's name, please comfort my mother. In other words, they obviously let the mother into the courtroom, maybe the father, I don't know. But Varghese continued, saying Taylor also turned around to his mother after the jury was done. He said to his mom, God bless you, Mom. Taylor is scheduled to be sentenced on May 13th, and it appears Judge Darka will likely make an example out of him to send a message to others who might consider building their own firearms in New York, according to Varghese. He could be facing between 10 and 18 years in prison. Now, I'm going to go ahead and throw this out there. If Mr. Taylor was actually a career criminal, and had stolen multiple cars and committed rampant assaults and batteries on his fellow citizens there, I don't think he'd have been facing any of this. But this is a direct, violent action against the Second Amendment, against the Constitution. It is an act of treason by this judge and by the prosecutor. And you people that were sitting on the jury ought to be ashamed of yourselves. You are constitutionally ignorant dolts. And for all of you anti-rights, pro-disarmament mugwumps out there, this is some of that common sense gun safety legislation that you've been brainwashed into believing would keep the public safe. Yeah, this is what it looks like right here. Because this is gun control right here. This gun control law has once again removed another productive member of society, cost them their freedom for a victimless crime. It's not even a crime anyway. Meanwhile, all the career criminals, they can run out there, run free, commit untold numbers of real crimes. They're slapped on their naughty little hands and set free without even having to post a bond. The article continues. However, the battle is far from over. Both Taylor and Varghese are committed to fighting this case to the end. Good. Even if it means taking it to the U.S. Supreme Court. Mr. Varghese said, we have a shot at winning in the federal court. Yes, sir, you certainly do. You ought to do a Bruin challenge, and then you need to go after that judge and that prosecutor with anything you've got, anything you can. Taylor's family has set up a Give, Send, Go campaign to help with his legal fees, and I'm going to post that link on this episode's page. Even if it's only $5, people, please send it. Yeah, you get 500,000 people sending $5, there's 250,000. Hope I did the math right there. I don't know. My brain is frying because of this injustice here. Well, I tell you what, this judge may think that this is okay. She may think that she is in complete control. She may think that she has absolute sway and control over the free exercise of people's God-given rights in her courtroom. She may think she can sit there and utter something like that. Don't you bring the Second Amendment in here. This is New York. She may think so, but I tell you what, there's several case precedents that have something to say about that. And I tell you what, we're going to get into those when we come back after a brief commercial timeout. Don't go anywhere. We got a whole lot more to go about multiple judicial decisions and their impact upon us all. Stick around. Be right back with more Shooting Straight.
The Police Hall of Fame and the United States Law Enforcement Foundation, where bold vision and hope align to create a better tomorrow for all law enforcement and the communities they serve by strong advocacy, hard and soft skills training and education, and their many programs of compassion. To learn more, please go to uslef.org or aphf.org.
Sicario's Gun Shop, buy, sell, or trade firearms, purchase Class 3 NFA items, custom builds, gunsmithing, and cleaning. Liberty Gun Safes. Sicario's Gun Shop fully supports our military and law enforcement. Visit online at sicariosgunshop.com or in person at 5325 North Wickham Road, Suite 105 in Melbourne, Florida.
Sicario's, where you come first for your second.
Welcome back to the program. As we've been talking about in the first half, talking about a decision by one Judge Darka, who sentenced a man to, well, he hadn't sentenced him yet, but went out of her way to make sure the jury saw things her way, flat out stated, don't you try to argue the Second Amendment in here. That's not going to fly. This is New York. It doesn't work here. Well, I'm sure I'm butchering the quote. Let me scroll back to and see if I can give you the actual quote. Let's see. Come on. I'm scrolling. Oh, no. She says, she told the attorney for Mr. Taylor, who was the man convicted, do not bring the Second Amendment into this courtroom. It doesn't exist here. So you can't argue Second Amendment. This is New York. Well, lady, I got news for you. This is the United States of America, and there's a supreme law that governs your sorry butt, and you don't belong on the bench. Matter of fact, there are multiple precedents that deal with judges like her. And let's start with looking at a case from back in 1974, Shure versus Rhodes. And there was a note in here about a certain judge. It said, by law, a judge is a state officer. The judge then acts not as a judge, but as a private individual in his person. When a judge acts as a trespasser of the law, when a judge does not follow the law, the judge loses subject matter jurisdiction, and the judge's orders are not voidable, but void and of no legal force or effect. The U.S. Supreme Court stated, when a state officer acts under a state law in a manner violative of the federal constitution, he comes into conflict with the superior authority of that constitution, and he is in that case stripped of his official and representative character and is subjected in his person to the consequences of his individual contact. In other words, you can't claim any kind of qualified immunity. It continues, the state has no power to impart to him any immunity from responsibility to the supreme authority of the United States. Here's another one, Cooper versus Aaron, 1958. It says, no state legislator or executive or judicial officer can wage war against the Constitution without violating his undertaking, also her undertaking, to support it. The constitutional theory is that we, the people, are the sovereigns, the state and federal officials, only our agents. Okay, Judge Darkey, matter of fact, I might email you all of these things and let you read them for yourself. Matter of fact, no, I'm not might. I'm going to do it. I'm going to see if I can scare up your email somewhere, and I'm going to send this to you. Matter of fact, I'm going to send you a recording of this program. Just, you know, special gift from me to you, from the kindness of my heart, of course. Also in the Cooper versus Aaron, it said, any judge who does not comply with his, her, oath to the Constitution of the United States wars against that Constitution and engages in acts in violation of the supreme law of the land. The judge is engaged in acts of treason. This is from this decision. The U.S. Supreme Court has stated that no state legislator or executive or judicial officer may wage war against the Constitution without violating his undertaking to support it. Oh my. Doesn't look good for the judge. And by the way, I certainly hope that, defense attorney, Mr. Varghese, is familiar with these precedents. I really do. Also, any judge from a 28 U.S. Code 454, practice of law by justices and judges. Any justice or judge appointed under the authority of the United States who engages in the practice of law is guilty of a high misdemeanor. Well, what that means is the judge is not supposed to be practicing law in the courtroom. They're supposed to be an unbiased listener who then renders decisions after a jury has made their decision. What is this judge doing, Judge Darka? Huh? She was influencing the case from the get-go. She belongs in jail. Now, also, there's another case I want you to look at. One by Mr. Hollis Wayne Fincher. He was convicted by a jury on one count of possession of a machine gun in violation of code U.S. Code 18922924, Section A, Subsection 2, and one count of possession of an unregistered sawed-off shotgun in violation of U.S. Code 26-5841, 5861-D, and 5871. Fincher did not dispute that he possessed those guns or that he did so without a license. And this, I'm reading from a decision by the judge who obviously looked at this on appeal. He said he appeals his conviction, however, arguing that he has the right to possess these weapons under the Second Amendment of the United States because his possession has some reasonable relationship to the maintenance of a well-regulated militia. Fincher also challenges the district court's determination that he is not eligible for court-appointed counsel and challenges the district court's request to resentence him. So did you catch that there? The district court basically said that he's not eligible for court-appointed counsel. Well, why not? If you can't afford counsel, it will be afforded to you at no charge. I said, the appeals court said, we affirm the conviction and remand the issue of Fincher's eligibility for court-appointed counsel to the district court for further inquiry. All right. One thing they talked about here, and that was the reading of the district court. I'm sorry. So in section one of this decision, it says Second Amendment, a background. Before Fincher's trial began, the government became aware of Fincher's intentions to argue to the jury that his possession of guns was protected under the Second Amendment. Because it is, people. Even if he had a freaking Gatling gun, it's protected by the Second Amendment. I don't care if he has a bazooka, an RPG, a law rocket, a tow missile, whatever. I mean, AT-4 rocket, whatever. We have the right to those things, whether you like it or not. The government says we don't because the government doesn't want to have to worry about us if they get out of hand or if they start crossing constitutional boundaries, like Judge Darka did. Mm-hmm. So it says, because this issue is a matter of law, the government filed a motion in limine asking the district court to prevent Fincher from arguing matters of law to the jury. Well, what in the blippity blank is he supposed to do when he doesn't have an attorney? You people are sick in the freaking head. After hearing oral argument on the motion, the district court granted the motion in part and denied it in part. In so doing, the district court stated that matters of the law are quintessentially within the province of the judge and not matters to be addressed to the jury. I disagree. Nevertheless, the district court stated it would allow Fincher to present evidence outside the presence of the jury that under United States v. Miller, 1939, and United States v. Hale, 1992, his possession of the guns was reasonably related to a well-regulated militia. As a matter of fact, he's part of the Michigan militia and one of the members in good standing. This is at the close of the government's case, or he was, I'm sorry, this was back in 92. Or what was it? I don't remember the date. Anyway, at the close of the government's case, Fincher moved for judgment of acquittal. The district court denied the motion, stating it was based on an attack on the law and not the evidence. What? He has a right to attack a law. Attorneys do it all the time. Attorneys attack laws and say they're not constitutional. By the way, you understand that the National Firearms Act of 1934 and the Gun Control Act of 1968 and all the subsequent enforcement thereof are nothing but attacks on the supreme law? So it's okay to attack the Constitution, the supreme law, but you can't attack a law that basically counters the Constitution? Where in the blippity blank do you people come from? Huh? Out from under rocks? Because you don't know a dadgum thing about the Constitution, I will tell you that right now. I'll tell you, listen, the NFA and the GCA both need a heavy Bruin challenge levied against them. You want to get the ATF out of your life and out of the firearms industry? That's how you do it. You let me know when you're ready to start ponying up some money. I'll go ahead and pledge $100 right here. If we get at least 1 million people to pony up $100, there's $100 million to throw into this fight. And if we can get more than that, that'd be even better. So, attack on the law. No, that law was an attack on the Constitution, so this man had every right to attack that law. Now, let's go ahead and look at something out of Washington State, because I told you before, these people are abso-freaking-lutely audacious, these communists. This one's going to boil your backside heavily. Is it boiling mine, and I'm not even into it yet. I am familiar with it, and that's why it's boiling me. Now it's about to boil you. Do you understand that the Washington State ban that was overturned, that overturning of it was stayed, but not by a judge? Okay, you're asking yourself, then how could that overturning that be stayed? Well, that's a dang good question. You let me know if you come up with an answer for that after you hear this article. This is an article out of Ammo Land Incorporated. Great online publication, by the way. Article by F. Ryle, editor-in-chief, posted on April 20th, 2024. You can find it at ammoland.com. Matter of fact, bookmark that on your laptop, your computer, or whatever, and check them out at least once or twice a day. No, but here's the article. Rogue Washington Supreme Court. Well, I'm not going to read the whole title because it's going to give it away again. Listen. In the ever-evolving discourse around the Second Amendment, recent events in Washington state have catapulted the debate into the national spotlight. The focal point of this ongoing battle is the recent ruling by Judge Gary Basher of Cowlitz County, which deemed the state's ban on magazines holding more than 10 rounds unconstitutional, because it is. This decision underscores a pivotal moment in our understanding and application of constitutional rights, specifically the right to keep and bear arms. Judge Basher's decision, issued on April 8th, 2024, didn't just stir the pot, it boiled it over. In a meticulously crafted 55-page ruling, he addressed the ban imposed by Washington State, highlighting its contradictions with both the state and federal constitutions. The judge's argument was clear. The restrictions infringe on the fundamental individual right to keep and bear arms, which is a cornerstone of American liberty. Amen. There was an immediate backlash, of course, and the Supreme Court in Washington State. Well, again, bear with me. I'm going to read it to you. However, the victory was short-lived. Within a mere 88 minutes, a Supreme Court commissioner, not a Supreme Court justice, a Supreme Court commissioner. So, you know, Supreme Court commissioners basically play the role of high-level law clerk. So listen, a Supreme Court commissioner issued a stay. What? Who the blippity blippin' blank gave a Supreme Court commissioner any jurisdictional, any judicial authority? Who the blippity blank do these people think they are? I told you they're audacious, but this really fries me. Wow, a Supreme Court commissioner, a clerk of the Supreme Court of Washington State, stayed the ruling? How does that give it, how is there any beef on that burger? How is there any, how is there any power in such a ruling? How is there any power in this Supreme Court commissioner's ruling? The Seattle Times reported, Attorney General Bob Ferguson filed an emergency appeal to the state Supreme Court seeking to get the law back on the books. Michael Johnston, the Washington State Supreme Court commissioner, granted an emergency. Who is he to grant anything? He doesn't have the authority. Keeping the ban in effect for now. The action temporarily halted the enforcement of Judge Basher's ruling, sparking a flurry of debate and confusion about the powers and limits of legal authorities in such significant matters. I'm sorry. They, again, state Supreme Court commissioners, state Supreme Court clerks have zero authority to issue rulings, to hear cases, to do anything of the sort. Why is Judge Basher, why is Washington State giving this any credence whatsoever by yielding to it? What the flippity blank is wrong with you people? Let your testicles drop, stiffen your back up, get some guts, stand up and say, back off, dude, who are you? You have zero authority for this. Grab yourself a hammer and head for the beach, you snot-nosed punk. My goodness. I looked up what Supreme Court commissioners' actual duties are. Here it is. First of all, they handle case management. They assist justices in managing the court's caseload because they're clerks. And they also review petitions. They review motions. They review legal documents. And they make sure that cases are properly prepared for consideration by the justices, by the sitting actual justices who actually have authority. They also have the duty of legal research and writing, because commissioners will be charged with by the justices to conduct legal research on issues that are put before the court. They also draft memoranda, as they call it, that summarizes relevant case law, statutes, other legal arguments, other legal precedents for that matter. And these memos will help justices make informed decisions. They help justices make informed decisions. They help justices make informed decisions, not law clerks. They also help with opinion drafting. They may draft opinions or contribute to the writing of opinions. While the justices have the final say, of course, and this is what I pulled off the internet, that in other words, the justices have the final say, the commissioner's input is valuable. Yes, it's valuable, but it doesn't have the force of law like the justices who actually sit on the freaking bench. They also help with the legal reasoning, and they allegedly are used to help ensure clarity. They're also required to attend oral arguments and also to help provide information and insights to the justices. They're allowed to ask questions or offer observations during such sessions, but they don't have any judicial authority. They're also required in their duties to be present for conference participation. They have to participate in the justices' conferences where cases are discussed. They share their views and contribute to the decision-making process. And I'm reading verbatim because I copied and pasted this in my notes. They're also charged with administrative duties, and we know that are part of the court's functioning, of course, and that includes scheduling, managing records, and overseeing court personnel. But certainly, they have no authority to issue rulings that have the force of law. Some commissioners also may specify in certain and specific areas of law, like tax law, patent law, and things like that. And they do assist justices in cases related to their expertise, but they don't have the authority to issue any kind of a stay on anything, any kind of a judicial opinion on anything. They're clerks. They're freaking clerks. Why are you people in Washington State giving that braying jackass any credence, any credibility or credence whatsoever? My word. Well, one more case to talk about here, and I'm glad it's a good one, because I'm ready to light myself on fire. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do what those other idiots did. But maybe light my hair on fire. I don't have much left anyway. But here's an article by Cam Edwards from BearingArms.com, another publication you should definitely bookmark on your computer. And here's I will give you the title of this one. Judge cites Second Amendment while dismissing gun charge against former school superintendent. My goodness, isn't this a breath of fresh air? Oh, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Jesus. Oh, Lord Jesus, come quickly. A former Kentucky? Yeah, when I get upset, I tell you what, I trip over my tongue. A former Kentucky school superintendent who was charged with possessing a firearm on school property had his case thrown out by a judge this week who said prosecutors hadn't been able to show a national tradition of prohibiting firearms on all property owned by a school district. In short, this judge basically used the Bruin standard of text and history, which is what it should be. The article continues, John Gunn, G-U-N-N, yes, coincidentally named, the former school superintendent in McCreary County, had just resigned his position in February 2023 when he went to the Board of Education office around 6 a.m. to gather his personal belongings from his office. Gunn was allegedly wearing a gun, a .45 caliber pistol, when he showed up at the building, but he left because his access card had been deactivated and he couldn't get inside. When he returned during normal business hours, he no longer had his gun with him, but he was still arrested by a school resource officer when he tried once more to collect his belongings. Mr. Gunn's attorneys, David S. Hoskins, argued that the law was an unconstitutional infringement on Gunn's right to keep and bear arms under the Second Amendment. Hoskins cited a 2022 case in which the U.S. Supreme Court set out a new standard for deciding the legality of gun restrictions, commonly called the Bruin case. The High Court said that gun laws must be assessed on whether they are consistent with the nation's historical tradition of firearm regulations. Hoskins argued there was no historical analog regarding regulating carrying arms or guns on school property as opposed to schools themselves. And as a result, Kentucky's prohibition on carrying guns as it was applied to Mr. Gunn, was unconstitutional. The prosecutor, Commonwealth's attorney Ronnie Bowling, argued in response that the Supreme Court's decision would still allow barring possession of guns in sensitive places such as schools. Gunn's act of carrying a gun at the school board office is not a traditional historical recognized right at the time the Second Amendment was ratified, Mr. Bowling said. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Bowling, you got that backwards, sir. And Mr. Cam Edwards said the same thing. He said Bowling got it backward. Unless he could show a longstanding tradition of treating school administrative offices as quote-unquote sensitive places, Gunn presumably had the right to have his firearm with him that morning, and Judge Dan Below cited the Supreme Court's history, text, and tradition test in dismissing the felony charge against the former superintendent. Judge Ballou, ruled the prosecution had not shown that the nation's historical tradition of regulating the possession of firearms extends to an individual carrying a firearm on property not utilized as a school, in other words, not a classroom, during a time when neither students nor school employees were present, and with no other alleged criminal acts being committed, regardless of the ownership of the property at issue. Well, I tell you what, this has been a wild ride through multiple judicial cases. I'm still gobsmacked. It's the audacity some of these people have, Judge Darka and the Supreme Court clerk, for all intents and purposes, in Washington State. This is what we're up against, people. This is why these gun control laws need to be taken down, dismantled. I don't care if it's one at a time or 20 at a time. There's 20,000 of them to go on the state level, state, federal, and local level, and they got to be taken down. We have to begin a Bruin challenge on them all. This is what's going to stop this madness, with decent, hardworking, upstanding Americans being thrown into jail for victimless crimes, which are not crimes at all, because, as I said, they have no victim. Nobody was hurt. Nobody had their rights infringed. This is the judiciary being weaponized against the people and their rights and the Constitution, and they are committing acts of treason when they do so. So, yes, I'll be posting that Give, Send, Go link for Mr. Oh, for Pete's sake, I'm having a brain hiccup here. Let me scroll back up here for the first order. Mr. Taylor. I'm going to post Mr. Taylor's Give, Send, Go link there on this episode's page. You can see it now. If you're listening to the episode, it's on the page that you clicked on. Please click on that and help Mr. Taylor out. I'm certainly going to. I hope you follow suit. We have to hang together, or we will all hang separately, as Mr. Benjamin Franklin said. That's it. Going to do it for this episode. Catch me on the next one. Share this episode around with your friends. Maybe they'll get an education. And never forget, incoming rounds always have the right of way. Royce out.